It's The Takeaway. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, host of the Slate podcast, What Next TBD, in for Tanzina Vega, who's on maternity leave. In the latest sign of financial fallout from COVID-19, the Commerce Department announced Wednesday that U.S. gross domestic product fell at an annual rate of 4.8% in the first quarter of 2020. That's the biggest GDP drop the country's seen since the Great Recession of 2008, and it's only expected to get worse in the coming months. But one industry is weathering the storm pretty darn well, and that's big tech. Giants like Google, Facebook, Apple, and Microsoft. Soon after the news about the GDP dive, Microsoft announced that its sales were up 15%, and that COVID-19 had, quote, minimal net impact on the total company revenue. And even as ad revenue has plummeted across digital platforms, Facebook's first quarter earnings were also stronger than expected. As the world hunkered down to stop the spread of the virus, services like Facebook, YouTube, and Amazon became critical. And so they've seen demand surge.
They were not prepared for this, just like no one else in the world was prepared.
That's Elizabeth Dwoskin, Silicon Valley correspondent for The Washington Post. After several years marked by scrutiny from states and the federal government over concerns of power and privacy, tech giants are looking to capitalize on this moment when their services are in high demand. Elizabeth's been writing about all this, and she joined me from her home office, so you might hear a few things happening in the background. I asked her whether this new dynamic has created less contentious relationships between public officials and the tech companies.
I think it definitely softens the edges of some of the contentious relationships. I used the example in the story of Gavin Newsom, that's governor of California, his press conferences, and he's holding up modeling for the charting the course of the disease. And those models, some of them are coming from underlying data from companies like Google and Facebook. And so, especially in California, you see it because of the relationship of the tech companies to the state. But before, the state was adversarial with big tech. I mean, even when Governor Newsom came on board as governor, one of the first things he talked about was like, you know, data is bill of rights for people. And, you know, so it's, and yet they're using the data that is collected now to model the course of coronavirus. So that in itself is a big reversal. And then I spoke with Gary Reback, who is a longtime antitrust lawyer who actually worked for the Department of Justice on the Microsoft case years ago. And now he's in private practice. And he represents a lot of these smaller, mid-sized companies that are bringing, you know, that have some evidence that could maybe help the government in bringing its antitrust cases. And he was just saying that, you know, the companies are slowing down the investigations now, even though he said that, you know, the politicians themselves, the people who are working on these cases say, we're not slowing down with the cases. We're not going to stop bringing these cases. But what's happening in practice is that the companies are saying, oh, our lawyers are working from home, so it's taking us a longer time to retrieve documents. You know, masses of documents need to be retrieved in discovery, and this is going to be harder, and there's really a slowdown.
I want to go back in time a little bit to 2008 and the recession that followed, something I covered looking at Washington and the banking industry. And I guess I was wondering, can you chart out what happened to the big tech companies, many of whom were much smaller then, and how the crash affected them?
You know, during the Great Recession, all of Wall Street got hit. And that speaks to the fact that the shareholder class had less money and they took their licks. And the whole economy, the whole market took its licks. But what happened afterwards is very interesting because the Great Recession also coincided with the advent of the smartphone. That moment of creating this, you know, the rise of the iPhone 2007, the rise of the App Store 2009, creates this explosion of businesses in Silicon Valley. You know, that's, you think of the startup boom, you know, an app for this, an app for that. Years later, people are using apps for this and that, but no one's really shopping on their phones. And this is a big question around, will people buy things on their smartphone? Will they, you know, they'll browse on their smartphone maybe, but the screens are too small. And the advertising industry itself was built around desktop. And so they hadn't actually even built ads that would really be clickable or work on a smartphone. Well, that is something that Facebook and Google figured out to great effect, because suddenly their apps and services became utilized so greatly, and people were just flowing naturally from the desktop to the smartphone. And once the tech giants, they weren't even the tech giants then, the big tech companies solved that question. We weren't even, as reporters, using that term tech giants in every story. Once they solved that question, you really see their revenues just start to completely accelerate and kind of just catapult ahead of the rest of the digital advertising industry. The tech platforms become the hubs for all of our reading habits and material, and also on the back end, all of the measurement and delivery of ads that really fuels this, I don't know, $70 billion global industry. And so, you know, that suddenly, it's like people woke up to that. I want to say 2015, 2016, and all of a sudden you have these tech giants and everyone else is failing. And the recession that's going to come because of COVID is going to accelerate that. Like already, if you read like Ad Age, you'll see that there's been layoffs in digital advertising already. And these companies are already struggling against Google and Facebook. And, you know, these are also the companies that fuel the media. The Washington Post is just owned by Jeff Bezos. And if we weren't, we would be in the same boat. And so you just see them poised to take even more market share after this, just kind of accelerating some of the trends that made them big and powerful. Well, that makes them more able to withstand the crisis. And when sort of the smaller players that were already hanging on start to fail or shake and become fragile and fall apart, you know, that they grow even further.
You know, at the same time that all of this is happening, we're seeing protests against the tech companies, including from their own workers, these agonized public conversations about the morality of, say, ordering from Amazon when they have had, as you mentioned, COVID outbreaks in their facilities. Does any of that public conversation have an effect either on company behavior or, I guess, on how these companies are perceived more broadly?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, some people have responded to me in the article, like some readers have responded to me by saying, hey, you know, this crisis is going to give a lot more power to companies like Amazon. Amazon is clearly the winner of winners. But, you know, that's going to make them even more of a target when things settle down. And possibly it's true. You know, the fact that they're going to accrue more power at some point, that's going to become glaringly obvious. Right now, it's not as obvious, even though I'm trying to make, you know, sound the alarms around it. But also on the workers, you know, since journalists started, you know, writing about these protests, and there's been a lot of coverage of the worker protests, the companies have been pushed to improve the situation a bit. So now Amazon is doing a lot more than it did. And I think they just said now when people come back to work, they're going to be doing temperature checks and masks and gloves. And when we first started writing about this, you know, Amazon wasn't even providing sanitizer to workers in many facilities and was also not even enforcing the social distancing, because when you're in these facilities doing packing, you know, you're standing very close to people. And so they weren't doing 6 feet of distance. I see that the public pressure does appear to have an effect, but I don't know how much of an effect. And it's also like I think they're going to do the minimum to get by and still run their business. And so the public pressure really matters. Just the continuing to beat the drum of public pressure really matters. Cause I've seen, as a tech reporter in the last 7 years, you know, that the companies do respond to it. You know, Facebook in particular, you know, now, you know, they've raised the pay for their content moderators. You know, I have no illusions. They would not have done that had there not been so much scrutiny of the fact that tens of thousands of people who review the ugliest content on the internet with huge psychological consequences are getting paid $15, $16 an hour. And so the Facebook has raised their wages. You know, that wouldn't happen if there wasn't scrutiny.
We started this conversation talking about what people call the techlash, this backlash to the size and power of the tech companies. And yet they have, as your reporting shows, gained so much from this moment. Is it too early to try to figure out where COVID-19 tilts the techlash?
I think it's subtle in some ways, is that people are just having more positive experiences. Like, I think I've seen people talk about how they're having positive experiences on social media now that remind them of when social media first started in a more innocent time before people realized all the data that was being collected and all the exposure and the screen time, and you know, that people are just actually just enjoying how these technologies can help them connect to people. I mean, people are loving, you know, all these intimate portraits actually of celebrities, like, you know, just looking into the living room of the celebrity and having them be more authentic. And there's like that whole idea of social media bringing authenticity, which we know, you know, has fallen by the wayside, because now it's become performative and fake. And so, but you're seeing a lot of authenticity that's refreshing as well. So I think that there's just a feeling to that really actually helps morale at the tech companies. Like when you talk about the tech lash, I think I've talked to people who say like the morale has really shifted, like at places like Facebook and certain parts of Google, just because like people are enjoying what they make and aren't complaining about it as much. They're depending on it. And so that affects morale. I mean, I think Facebook, which has taken like the biggest morale hit because they also had their Cambridge Analytica, they've just had more scandals than the others. And people at Facebook, like Facebook, for all the money it can pay people, has had trouble recruiting people even. And they can pay so much more than almost any startup. But people haven't wanted to work there because it's felt like it's an unethical company. And morale has been really low. And people always tell me, oh, I'm embarrassed to talk about that I work at Facebook at the family dinner party. People who joined Facebook so they could brag at the family dinner party. And now that's changed. And so I've talked to people who say like, well, now it's nice because my family's using Portal, their camera, you know, it's their webcam. People are talking about it again. And, you know, it wasn't an accident that Sheryl Sandberg, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has been on a media tour. And it's no accident that they broadcast that they're hiring 10,000 people. None of the other companies besides Amazon have really gone so far to say, we're hiring thousands of people by the end of this year. It was almost saying, you know, give me you're tired, you're laid off of Silicon Valley and come work for us, finally.
Elizabeth Dwoskin, Silicon Valley correspondent for The Washington Post. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you can hear an extended version of this interview on tomorrow's episode of Slate's podcast, What Next TBD, where you can find me hosting a tech and future themed episode every Friday. And another friend of WNYC, Mary Harris, hosts What Next Monday through Thursday. You can find them both wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.